While everybody's coming in, I'll just share some material that you may be interested in on the book table. The first book I put together is called Biblical Solutions to Personal Problems. It's an outline of everything I found in the Bible with different problems people have. For example, here's everything I found on bitterness. Here's everything I found on covetousness. Here's everything I found on depression. And it merely outlines the material I found in the Bible. Like here are the causes of why people were depressed in the Bible. Here are examples of people who were depressed in the Bible. Here are characteristics, 11 characteristics of a depressed person. Here are the consequences if those issues weren't resolved. And there's 7 things God did to resolve people's depression. It's just a workbook. If you want to teach this, like in Sunday school, home Bible study, ladies Bible study, there's a workbook that goes with it. This one has all the answers. This particular book has just blanks where people answer the questions based on the scriptural reference. So that's available on the back table if you are interested. I appreciated Sharon's story, testimony. Sharon's story was that of a girl who emotionally was neglected, not cared for, not loved, not focused on her heart. This particular book is a book of a girl by the name of Birdie who never experienced love for the first 40 years of her life. She came into our office, and when I looked to find her emotional needs, she just burst into tears. She had never been loved by her husband of 20 years, and she'd never been loved by her parents. She actually had 9 different mothers over 18 years, and no one ever connected with her. And it's her story. You won't put this book down if you start reading it, because you'll be enamored with what happened in her life and what God did to bring transformation in her life. The last 2 evenings, I focused our attention on emotional pain issues and pressure patterns. And tomorrow night we'll be talking about abuse issues. Those 3 areas are outlined in this DVD series, and some of you may have family members that you would like to share this material with. There are 21 testimonies of 21 couples that came to freedom with 21 different problems. So you're going to have a testimony of a lady from Florida whose daddy was angry. He was a deacon in a Baptist church, and she emotionally got locked up with her daddy's anger. She's going to tell the story of what happened. Then there's going to be a 30-minute interview with each of those 21 individuals or couples. And later in the week, we're going to share some of the testimonies out of here. Right now, we're just having live testimonies, because live testimonies are better than DVD testimonies, even though they're real people somewhere. But then you have a 30-minute presentation by me on that problem. So there's a lot more material in here that I'm presenting tonight, just because we don't have time in 4 days to actually present all this material. But I would encourage you to show this in a Sunday school class. You can pick a testimony and maybe share some of the concepts about how anger and criticism damage, because I want people to get free from these issues personally, and I want them not to damage their children with these issues. So if you like to do Bible studies in your home, or you enjoy teaching a Sunday school class, I would encourage you to get a hold of this series, because I want you to share it so other people come to freedom. By the way, this is on CD as well. If you like to plug a CD in while you're driving down the road, and listen to some of these testimonies. By the way, these testimonies aren't boring testimonies, just like the one we just listened to. It's fun to listen to them, because it's real people sharing their real struggles and how they came to freedom from those issues. In this session, I'd like to talk about depression and how depression affects a person. And if you have this blue workbook, if you've purchased it, we're going to turn to page 116 in this book, and we're going to be focusing on depression in this session. One of the problems that we have in our culture is people have been emotionally damaged. And because they have been emotionally damaged, often they get depressed inside. And I'd like to talk about depression and share with you what I've come to understand about depression. First of all, one out of four people coming into my office has a depression problem. And I carried depression for 20 years personally, from 15 to 35, until I understood what caused my depression and came to freedom. Depression is not a core problem. Depression tells me that someone has been emotionally damaged. Now, 5% of depression is caused by chemical imbalance. 90 to 95% of depression is caused by emotional or spiritual issues unresolved inside. So if a person has been damaged emotionally, they're going to get depressed. If Sharon and Jim don't mind, I'm going to refer to their testimony. Sharon, because she was neglected emotionally, was depressed. Then she married a husband. You remember I said 90% of the time we marry our worst parent? Okay, she wasn't connected to her parents emotionally. They didn't emotionally care and connect with her. Then she marries a detached husband who had his issues, why he wasn't connecting, and she struggled with depression. Her depression was caused by emotional neglect. Now, on Thursday, I'm going to be sharing some new material on depression, in which I'm going to share the fact that if you want to help a person come to freedom from their depression, you go back to find how they were emotionally damaged, define it specifically, lead them in a prayer to disconnect that, get one person to care about that, and they'll lose their depression. In her case, one of the issues that she struggled with was emotional neglect. And that is what led to depression. In my case, my depression was more from pressure patterns. Perfectionist father, dominant father, angry father who lectured me if I didn't do what he wanted. And emotionally, I struggled and went into depression and stopped talking every time those four pressures came. So mine came more from the emotional pain of pressure patterns. Hers came from emotional pain that we were talking about last night. Now, if 90 to 95% of depression is caused by emotional pain or spiritual issues like bitterness or holding anger inside, then the question we want to ask is, can we as the church, believers, help people get free from their depression? And the answer is yes. My favorite thing is to take a 99% depressed person and see if in 4 hours I can knock off their pain. It's a lot of fun because all the books that are written on depression say if you're once depressed, you'll always be depressed. I don't believe that. Because if one person would have understood my heart in the last 64 years and sat down with me and says, John, I want to understand what's happening with you. Will you just be open with me and tell me what's happening inside? In a matter of 10, 12 hours the most, they would have found what was happening inside my heart and what caused my depression. If they would have led me in a prayer and cared about what I was struggling with, I'd lost my depression. It's that simple. It's not complicated. Now the problem is the church has relegated depression to professionals. But there's a problem. There's three counseling models out there. The first counseling model is a nouthetic counseling model where if you say to someone you're depressed, they'll tell you, what do you have those negative thoughts for? You're not supposed to have negative thoughts. The Bible says you're supposed to bring every thought captive to Christ. Now, if you're depressed and someone tells you what you ought to be doing based on Scripture, you're going to get more depressed. That does not solve depression. Because what you're doing is you're putting another pressure on them and they can't cope with the pressure they already got. So depression is never solved by criticizing them or pressuring them. Depression is only caused or only solved when we accept, understand, and care about what's happening inside a person's heart. And you have to focus on their heart, not their head. Because it's in the heart where that depression is. The second kind of counseling, and this is what the major seminaries in the United States, and if I named the seminaries, you'd recognize them. The major seminaries believe that you never tell a person what their problem is. What you do in counseling is they come in and tell you what their problem is, and they have to figure out the answer to their own problem. That's why the average counselee stays in counseling for 2.5 years. Now, if you're paying $80 a week for 8 years or 2.5 years, that's a lot of money. They actually make money off of you. I had a suicidal lady that came to my office, and in a matter of 3 sessions, I had her free from her suicidal thoughts. She went to a professional counselor who's a Christian, and she says, I don't need you anymore because I got free in a pastor's office. And the lady went into depression and suicidal thoughts herself and says, you can't leave me, I need you. So she was paying the lady $85 an hour to solve the counselor's problem. Now, that's a lot of fun. Why would you pay a counselor to solve her problem? Now, the counselor should have paid her $85 for needing her to help her. Now, the counselor was addicted to her clients, needing her clients to give her fulfillment. Now, let me just say this. The majority, probably 90% of Christian counseling being taught in our seminaries is based on a non-Christian philosophy that you can't ever solve people's problems. All you do is talk to them about it. You never lead a person in a prayer. By the way, never go to counseling if someone doesn't lead you in a prayer to resolve your pain. Because what they're doing is merely talking to you about your problem, because they really believe that the only solution to your problem is if you feel better because you talk about it. Now, you will feel better. But let's just take a girl that's been sexually abused. Let's say a girl's raped at 14. And she goes to a counselor and says, I need help with my rape. Will you help me? And the counselor says, tell me about your pain. So the client shares her pain of being raped. And she opens her heart and bursts into tears. And the counselor just asks for more pain, more information. What happens is if you just talk about a problem, in the third hour of counseling, that pain is going to turn to concrete, because every week you're focused on your pain. No one is ever helping you resolve that pain. Now, if you came to a Caring for the Heart counseling office and you said, I was raped at 14, within the session, I would be leading you in a prayer for Jesus to heal that pain in your heart. I would ask for the incident, and you might say, I was here on this particular day when I was raped. Here's the emotional pain I experienced. That's all I need to lead you to Jesus to resolve that. So within a matter of hours, you're actually going to feel 80% of your pain gone if you come to my office. Now, I haven't healed anybody, but I know someone, the Lord Jesus Christ, who can bring peace to a heart that's been damaged. So you want to be careful what counselor you go to, because most of the counselors never pray with their clients. They never care about the pain. They don't know how to lead a person in a prayer to Jesus to heal that pain. I have probably ruined more counseling sessions where people make money off of clients. We don't charge for counseling. It's free. And people have spent $40,000 on counseling before they came into my office. They come to my office and they get free and say, I don't need to go to counseling. So the counselor loses a client. That's what happens. Now let's talk about depression. What are the causes of why people get depressed? Some people get depressed because they don't sleep well. If you don't have adequate rest, depression can come. Elijah didn't sleep well when he, after Mount Carmel experience, and as a result, he was depressed. The second reason people get depressed is they don't eat properly. They've done studies in universities, and they said during test week, when students don't eat properly because they're studying all the time, the depression spikes in that week, and more students go for counseling for depression any other time. Thirdly, people get depressed because of anger held inside at God and other people. 100% of all people hospitalized for depression, the cause is unresolved anger. That's a quote from Minrith Meyer. They're from Texas, so must be right. Okay, so 100% of everyone hospitalized, when someone has to go to the hospital because they're depressed, the cause is unresolved anger. It's interesting, Cain in the Bible in Genesis 4 was angry. Moses was angry in Numbers 11. Elijah in 1 Kings 19 was angry. All three of these men in the Bible were angry, and that's what led to their depression. So when you hold anger in, often that leads to depression. Fourth, excessive stress leads to depression. If you have too much pressure, you can get depressed. Moses had to deal with 2.5 million people in the desert, and he was overwhelmed and depressed. Elijah was depressed when the people of Israel didn't turn to God after Mount Carmel. In Matthew 26, it says that Christ was severely depressed in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he called for his three closest disciples to pray with them, and they fell asleep. So Christ was depressed. Now, Christ never sinned. You don't have to sin to get depressed, but stress can produce that depression, and it did in the Lord Jesus Christ. The fifth reason people get depressed is because they feel sorry for themselves because of circumstances in their life. Moses, David, and Jonah all had circumstances that went the wrong direction, and they got depressed. The sixth reason people get depressed is because they disobey what God's asked them to do. Cain killed his brother, and that led to depression. Often women who have an abortion get depressed because they killed a child, and that event leads to a future depression. David was depressed. Jonah was depressed because the people of Nineveh repented. It's amazing that someone would get depressed because someone turned to God, but that was Jonah's experience. The seventh reason people get depressed is because they have personal expectations of others or of God that are not realized. Jonah didn't want Nineveh to repent. He got depressed because they repented. Elijah wanted the people to turn back to God on Mount Carmel, and when they didn't turn back, he got depressed. By the way, sometimes preachers get depressed because people don't get saved or people don't come to church. It's interesting because of expectations they have of their people. Moses wanted the Israelites to stop complaining. When they didn't, he got depressed. The eighth reason people get depressed is fear. Fear of what might happen causes people to get depressed. And the ninth reason people get depressed is loneliness, because no one's connecting with them, no one's caring. That last ninth cause of depression I'd like to talk about. When a person is depressed, that person can't stay depressed if someone is caring about the emotional pain they're experiencing. So if you have a lonely person who feels like no one loves them and they're not wanted, and someone chooses to love that person and emotionally opens their heart to care, that person can't keep their depression. Let's use Sharon as an example. Sharon said in her story she was depressed. Why? Because she was neglected. She felt lonely. Other members of her family were cherished and loved. She wasn't. So she marries this quiet husband who's working. He doesn't know how to connect with her. Now, if her husband would have taken the time to understand, you were neglected as a child, what if I connected to care about that little girl who's never felt loved? I exaggerated her problem. Never felt loved. What if I wanted an unwanted girl? What if I cared about her heart? If her husband would have looked in her eyes and connected with her, he would have destroyed her depression in a matter of 5 minutes. That's actually what happened in counseling. But I'm going to say this. If you define what's causing a person's depression and you start caring about that, you'll mess up their depression. So if someone's depressed in your church or in this church, and you go to them and say, "What's happening?" And they say, "Well, everybody criticizes me. My husband's criticizing me. My dad criticized me. My mom criticized me. Everyone rejects me and criticizes me. What's their problem?" they haven't been accepted. If you accept them as a person, as a friend, and you start caring about that emotional pain inside their heart, you'll mess up their depression. It's that simple. Now just try it. Now in any church, about every sixth person on Sunday is depressed. So we count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Sorry, I ended with you. I wasn't planning on it. Okay, about every sixth person is depressed. If you look down their row, you can see their depression. They can't smile. They're not responding. They're not talking. And if you go up to them and say, "Do you have a minute that we could talk? What is your deepest emotional need?" Now, I'm giving you secrets to get inside the heart of depressed people. What is your deepest emotional need? How can I care about what's going on inside your heart? How have you been damaged? What if I cared about that? All of a sudden, you're going to see a person's face light up. You've just connected with them. You've cared about something they've never experienced. Now, you don't do this on Sunday morning. You have to do this alone, across the table, or at a coffee shop where you start caring about someone. Because if you start understanding a person's emotional need and how they were damaged that led through their depression, and you start caring, their face will light up, and it's going to look like a little girl's heart if it's a lady, a little boy's heart if it's a man, and all of a sudden they're going to open everything up to you, and they're going to get all excited about you because you've just met an emotional need. Every person sitting here longs for love. Any exception? Anybody not want love? Every person sitting here wants somebody to care about their heart. Now, technically, God designed a dad and mom to care about their children, and a lot of them do. But some parents are so wrapped up in themselves, working hard, having their own problems, anger, whatever, that they never connect with their children, and those children feel emotional pain. And it starts a cycle of depression that creates a struggle. A gentleman was working for Hewlett-Packard, and he was so depressed he couldn't function anymore, and he went to his pastor in Colorado Springs, and the pastor says, "Well, I need to send you to a psychiatrist." So he sent him to his psychiatrist, who was a Christian, and the man says, "You have a chemical imbalance, and you need to take these pills for the rest of your life." So he took the prescription. Before he filled a prescription, he called me in. He knew I was a pastor in another church in town. He says, "John, will you talk to me? I got a problem." So he came in, and for 2 hours I talked with him. He was severely depressed. His face was just beet red, and he couldn't function. He taped boxes, and his boss kept criticizing him at work and would yell at him because he couldn't put tape straight on boxes for Hewlett-Packard. And his wife was making twice as much money as he was, and he was just severely depressed, so they put him on a 3 months leave of absence. So he's sitting there, and while he's going through telling me about his chemical imbalance, I'm looking for the cause of his depression. And I have a sheet of paper, and on that sheet of paper is these 9 reasons why people are depressed. And I realized that this particular man had no reason to live. He was emotionally hurting inside. And at the end of the session, he wanted to pay me, but I don't take money for my counseling. And he says, "What can I do?" And I says, "Well, I have all these charts. Do you have any time with your new Hewlett-Packard computer to put these on a beautiful chart?" I would scribble these charts out like this, and I had 20 of them in a file that I was hoping someone would figure out how to put them on a beautiful piece of paper like this. And he said, "I'd be glad to do that." The next night, his wife called me and says, "What did you do to my husband?" I was embarrassed. I gave him a job. I needed him. His boss at Hewlett-Packard didn't need him, didn't value him. I valued him. His wife says he lost his depression. I said, "It's because I gave him a job. He had no reason to live." Because I said, no one ever valued him. His children don't value him. You're not valuing him. His boss didn't value him, and he just gave up. That's why he's depressed. The next time he came into my office, I said, "Were you depressed in the last week since you saw me?" And he says, "No." I said, "What happened to your depression?" He says, "I don't know." I says, "Can I tell you what happened? You were depressed because you could never achieve whatever you're supposed to achieve in taping boxes at Hewlett Packard. Your boss kept screaming and yelling at you because you couldn't do it right. You had no connection at home. So I decided, as a counselor, as your pastor, or as a pastor, I wasn't his pastor, to value you." And I says, "When I valued you, you found your identity. You found worth. You found value. Someone needed you. And you lost your depression." Can I recommend something? You go to Mesa Hills Bible Church in Colorado Springs. Your pastor needs, then we had overhead projectors. He needs acetates to put his sermon up on the screen. He may have a missions conference and need a banner. Would you do that for him? You have a brand new Hewlett Packard computer with color printer. He says, "I'd be glad to do that." That was 12 years ago. I still go to Mesa Hills Bible Church to visit that church once in a while, and there's always great big charts all over the walls. It doesn't say made by Joe, but I know who made those charts. Because all of a sudden he felt valued. The church needed him. His pastor needed him. I showed his wife how to need him. I showed them how to connect emotionally. The man wasn't chemically imbalanced. He had an emotional pain issue that led to his depression. And when I started helping him understand that, he could come to freedom from that. What are the consequences of depression? When a person's depressed, they like to be alone. Elijah went off into a cave by himself. Wives often go to their bedroom for 3 days and they don't come out. They don't make meals, they don't wash dishes, they don't clean the house. And the children kind of survive in the house. The mother's in the bedroom depressed. Men often take off, go hunting in their depression. And they're off by themselves. They never tell anybody, "I'm depressed." By the way, not every hunter is depressed. But they take off and they don't come back. And it's because they're covering pain. Secondly, the second consequence of depression is people have a sense of rejection by others. Elijah and Cain, both in the Bible, felt rejected all alone, like no one cared. That's a cause of depression. Thirdly, feelings of worthlessness. That's what was the problem with Joe. He had no value. No one had ever valued him. Caused depression. Fourth is anger held inside often leads to unresolved depression. The fifth thing that is characteristic of a depressed person is they stop fulfilling responsibilities. When I was depressed, I couldn't even get the lawnmower going to mow the lawn. I couldn't clean my garage out. I couldn't wash the car. Normal things that aren't difficult for me to do, I just couldn't do. Women that have depression often leave dishes in the sink. They can't wash the clothes. So you have all these dirty clothes and they can't get them done. That's a consequence or characteristic of a depressed person. Number six, they desire to escape pressure and responsibilities. Elijah wanted to get away. Obviously, Jezebel wanted to take his life, but he wanted to get away from pressure. I've had pastors that just want to get away from their churches. They can't deal with the pressure because they're depressed. Wives can't deal with their families. A depressed person, a small problem is exaggerated, so a depressed person can't stand crying kids. If they're not depressed, they're fine with crying kids, but when they're depressed, they can't deal with that. Husbands who are depressed can't deal with the pain that others inflict on them. Number seven, a depressed person often has a sense of being alienated from God. They feel like God doesn't care, God doesn't understand, He's not there. And many times a depressed person stops praying and they never sense relationship with God. Number eight, they lose their joy, and a depressed person's face is drawn. There's no joy, no happiness, no fulfillment on their face. And often they complain because circumstances are overwhelming. And finally, sometimes they desire to end their life. Moses, Elijah, and Jonah in the Bible all wanted God to end their life. Why? Because of their depression. Now, what's the answer for depression? I'd like to share very simply 5 steps to resolve depression. First of all, you have to understand that depression always has a cause. And if a person's been emotionally damaged, you have to figure out what is causing the reason they're depressed. In Sharon's example, which is a good example, and I'm glad they shared their testimony tonight, Sharon was emotionally neglected as a child. And her siblings were favored. That's what started triggering her depression. So when her husband got busy after he was married and couldn't communicate with her, he stepped on her pain without realizing it. And emotionally, she started struggling inside and felt rejected, alone, unloved, not wanted. Those are my terms. They're not her terms. You can ask her what her terms are because she didn't define all of those. And emotionally, she started slipping down into her depression. So the first step is to understand a person's emotional pain. The second step is to care about that pain and to meet that emotional need in that person. If your spouse is depressed, when you take that issue and you start caring about it and you understand that issue, what happens is that person loses their depression just because you care about it. Thirdly, you want to lead them in a prayer to Jesus to heal the pain that they're experiencing. For example, let's say that you have a husband who's depressed and it's because he had a dominant, angry father. You want to lead him in a prayer to disconnect that pain. And this particular workbook has all those prayers in it to actually help you actually do that. I actually made it easy for you to find those prayers because they're right in the book. The fourth step is to connect to care about that person every day to fulfill that emotional need that they struggle with. If Jim connects with Sharon to meet her emotional need every day, she can't find her depression. Won't work. I was depressed for 20 years. If my wife connects with me in the morning on an emotional level, I can't find my depression the rest of that day. Doesn't make any difference what happens to me. Because someone is caring about that. And the final thing is to emotionally connect, to fulfill relationship. In a marriage, you have a husband who can connect to a wife who can connect to a husband. If you have a single person, you have to have a single person, like a girl connecting with another girl who's depressed. Or if you have a parent can connect with children who are depressed to actually disconnect that pain. Now, I want to share this with you. Most people don't understand why they're depressed. And as a result of that, they just get depressed. And you and I, as believers, have to help them understand what's causing the issues they struggle with. And often what I do is I take this particular sheet that we passed out last night, which just has a list of emotional pain words, and I have a person put a 0 to 10 in front of every word. You can find out where their pain is inside their heart, because the 8, 9s, and 10s are the issues where they were emotionally damaged. The second way is to take page 116 in the Biblical Concepts Counseling Workbook, which is this book right here. And on page 116, you have a list of negative thoughts. And those negative thoughts will lead you to where a person's pain is. If a person says, "I am worthless," somebody hasn't valued them. If they put on here, "No one cares, no one even notices me," I know that someone didn't connect emotionally with them. If someone says, I can never measure up, they had a perfectionist father or mother, or someone has damaged them in that way. And you can take these two sheets to actually understand what's happening inside of the heart of a person and begin caring. Do you realize that every person here wants to be accepted and loved, cared for? But you don't hear sermons about that. And I'm going to suggest to you that you and I have the opportunity of reaching into the hearts of others and caring. I'd like for you to, first of all, care about your children. Because if you've damaged your children, they want your affection. They want you to care about them. And children are easy, especially when they're young. But probably 80 to 90% of children are not being emotionally cared for by their parents. And you and I have the opportunity as parents to care for them. If you're a Sunday school teacher in one of these classrooms, it says 2 to 3 year olds, do you realize that probably 80% of the students in your classroom have not been cared for by their parents that week? And they're emotionally hurting. You know, if I was in that classroom with 2 and 3 year olds, you know what I'd do? If I was a teacher, I'd make sure every one of those kids felt loved by me. As a teacher, you know what they're going to do? You're going to be their best friend if they were not loved at home. And you're going to actually mess up their depression if you talk about Jesus' love for them, your love for them, and you want to penetrate their hearts with the love of Jesus. And you want to love them as their teacher. You want to be Jesus to them. What's going to happen is they'll never forget you. I have 2 Sunday school teachers that I'll never forget. One of the guy's name was Mr. Suderman. He cared about every one of his boys in his class. I'll never forget him. The other teacher I'll never forget is he took us on an outing and he borrowed my dad's truck and he forgot me, dropped me off at the grocery store and forgot me and went on. And I was just 5 or 6 years of age and I was crying because I'd been left, you know, 5 or 6, you don't know that. And I watched my Sunday school go to my daddy and apologize for leaving me at the grocery store. My father never apologized for anything, but my Sunday school teacher did. And I'll never forget that. Secondly, you might have a spouse who's depressed. Can I encourage you to take these 2 worksheets home? Just ask your spouse to check off the negative thoughts. The more negative thoughts that the person checks off on here, the higher depression. So if you mark 80% of this, it means you have an 80% depression score. If you mark 50%, you have a 50% depression score. If you mark them all, you have a 100% depression score. That's how I find people's depression with this sheet. And if you start caring about that person, all of a sudden they'll smile. You actually messed up their depression. Can I challenge you with something tonight? Instead of sending depressed people to the hospital, can I encourage you to care about their hearts? Can I encourage you to reach out to them, to understand their pain? Because 95% of depressed people would never be hospitalized if one person cared. Now, we can't let the pastor care about everyone that's depressed because he's too busy. I want each of you to be involved. And if you see a depressed person or you know a depressed person, go to them and say, I heard this crazy guy in our church. And he said, if I understood you and I cared about you, you'd lose your depression. And I'd like to spend a couple hours every week just caring about your heart. All of a sudden, that person's going to burst into tears and start opening their pain. If you take this sheet over here, what are the consequences or the causes or characteristics of a depressed person? And you take that sheet, and these are in the books that are on the table, and you say, cross off all the ones that don't relate to you. And like Joe, you find out the cause of a depression, you start caring, you're going to mess up their problem. You're going to save them $40,000 because it takes $40,000 to hospitalize a depressed person for 30 days. And you'll develop a friend and you'll actually mess up their problem. By the way, you caring about a person is more important than any psychiatrist sitting down and meeting with a depressed person. Now, if a person doesn't snap out of the depression when you care, it could be that they're the 5% with a chemical imbalance and they need to go see their doctor. Because sometimes women go through the change in their life and everything chemically gets messed up. Ladies have little children and afterwards get depressed because their body isn't functioning properly chemically. Those kind of things the doctor needs to help a person with. But the emotional and spiritual issues, God wants you and I to care about those hearts. Can I encourage you to do that? It's my favorite thing to do, to take a depressed person, find the cause, lead them to Jesus for healing, and then I find one person to care about that person. I love to do that because a person that can't smile all of a sudden smiles because someone's cared for them. Let's bow in a word of prayer.